Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hour number two, Michelle Knazovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. Nick Kieser on the ones and the twos with us. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. Tune in for National Sounds Baseball tomorrow night at 6.30, 5 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds come home to take on the Gwinnett Stripers, AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Text us. We got a lot of text on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Do you know that I told somebody my phone number was out the other day?
Oh, he gave out your phone? I'm sorry. Keezer was in my ear trying to make a joke, a play on words of the Gwinnett Stripers, so yeah, I'm kind of frazzled right now trying to keep it together, but yeah, get out of my ear, dude. But
get out of my ear, dude.
Either way, but no, yeah, I feel like I say our text line more than I'd say my own phone number. So
yeah, I was trying to figure out some electric thing, and they're like, "What's your phone number?" And I was like, 615-737-1025. And I was like, "Oh, wait, actually," and they're like, "What?" And they're like, "Why are you acting so weird?" But yeah, that's a little funny story of the day. That is the station's phone number, and you will get, you'll be talking about sports and all the sports topics if you text that number. So we have got, and I know we're going to have a lot of thoughts on this, Junie. So Nick Suss of the Tennessean came out with a really unique article on Malik Willis's personal quarterback coach. And he talked to him after the draft, after the Tennessee Titans draft Will Levis, because, you know, the interesting part of this is we haven't even brought up his name really since Josh Dobbs took over the starting job, right? I mean, he has completely kind of out of sight, out of mind, and we haven't been talking about him as a factor. After the draft, you know, Mike Vrabel goes ahead and says Ryan Tannehill is our starter, then Malik Willis, and then Will Levis, but it's subject to change. And I think this article was really interesting, and if you haven't read it, it's by Nick Suss on the Tennessean, but essentially he wrote, he got to talk to Malik Willis's personal quarterback coach, and I just want to read a couple quotes from there on the coach. This was from Sean McElroy, so he is his personal quarterback coach. Quote, I think the learning piece for Malik is understanding it's different now. It's important that you're on a time executing the offense in a way a guy with less ability to extend would do it. It's almost like he needs to play more like a Logan Woodside than a Malik Willis in certain times. He also goes on to say, Willis's mindset hasn't changed. His goal is to be Tannehill's successor. Competing with Will Levis does not change that. So, of course, Malik Willis is going to have that mindset. He got drafted. He has one of the biggest chips on his shoulder this offseason of, wow, they just drafted a guy in the second round. They moved up to get him. He was viewed as a first overall pick. You know, I got drafted last year. I got an opportunity to go out there. I'm sure he's probably the first one to say he didn't perform to the level he would have liked to perform at. But, you know, looking at him as a complete non-factor, what does that look like heading into camp? And what do you make of those comments? Because, I mean, if you go on to read the article, and I know you did, Junie, but it kind of talks about, you know, the way he used to play at Liberty was praised in his ability to use his legs and to make his throws. But when he was here in Tennessee, they wanted him to focus more on his accuracy and timing and things like that than rather trying to run out of the pocket and create a play himself.
Well, I mean, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL, you have to have a good arm. Like, mobility is important in today's game because of how athletic the edge rushers are. You know, defenders and defensive linemen, linebackers are all getting faster. I mean, you look at a guy like Micah Parsons running a 4.3 as an edge rusher. These guys got to be able to move around. But if you can't set your feet and make a pass and have, you know, at least a 60% completion rate, which Malik Willis I don't believe ever had this past season, and you can't throw for under 100 yards, I mean, it just cripples your offense and the production that your offense could potentially have. It made them one-dimensional. You know, Derrick Henry, he had a really big game against the Houston Texans early on in the year. But in other games, it really kind of limited what Derrick Henry could do. And I just think in order for Malik Willis to be in a situation that he could actually compete with Levis and Tannehill, he's going to have to take an astronomical jump. Like, it has to be huge. Because him doing what he did at Liberty is completely different from the experience of what Will Levis had playing in the SEC. And you're talking about a size difference. I don't think their athleticism is far off from one another. I don't think Malik Willis is going to be much faster than Will Levis. I mean, people forget, because of, you know, his injuries this past year, Will Levis is a very mobile quarterback. I mean, he had 9 rushing touchdowns in 2021.
Yeah, you didn't see that this year with the turf toe injury and him even just running out of the pocket and able to make throws and quite literally run through people. But I just think it's like an interesting storyline, Junie, that we haven't talked about, because, I mean, you think about this time a year ago, it was – they drafted a quarterback in the 3rd round. You know, Malik Willis was viewed up until the day of the draft. Could he have gone in the 1st round? You know, what does that look like? Is there a quarterback controversy heading into camp? And we heard the Ryan Tannehill comments on, it's not my job to mentor him. And then that got blown up in national media. It's a quarterback controversy. I don't think anybody who actually covered the team day in and day out looked at the skill set and thought, this is a quarterback controversy.
No one in town thought it was.
But you watched him in training camp. He was a fun story to follow. And then when Ryan Tannehill got hurt, it was, okay, I mean, we saw Malik Willis in some preseason games. What can he do? And I think it was very clear right off the bat that he had a very hard time running this pro-style offense, which was something that he wasn't in college. Right? We talk about, you know, some of the college offenses, right? The Lincoln Riley offense that he was in at Liberty was the, you know, wide out spread, not a run first NFL offense.
A lot of RPOs, a lot of, you know, using his legs, using his mobility to extend and basically using that part of his game to wait till receivers popped open. And in the NFL, you have to make those tight windows throws. You have to have anticipation. You have to be able to make pre-snap reads in order to really know, like, where likely the receiver is going to be open. You have to throw guys open. Like, guys aren't going to be open. You have to put the ball in a spot to where your guy can go and get it. And Malik Willis struggled with all of those things. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to pick up the blitz. That's one thing that he struggled with in college, because I remember a game that he played before he got drafted. They took on Ole Miss, and it was like Matt Corral versus Malik Willis. In that entire game, and again, this is SEC versus, you know, Liberty, he was running for his life, and mm-hmm. he couldn't pick up the blitz. He couldn't make a quick read, and he struggled with that. So I just look at all of this, and I think part of the reason it's not being talked about because of how unlikely it is for him to be able to make that jump because of how bad he looked last year. I mean, he was the worst quarterback that stepped on a football field in the NFL last year. There was not one worse than him statistically, and it was by a large margin. So if Malik Willis is going to have any kind of say or any kind of future, he's going to have that chip on his shoulder, and he's going to have to come out tenfolds better than what he was last year.
You know, I wish we had a grasp on what his S2 score was. I feel like last year S2 just wasn't as big. It wasn't talked about. And then, of course, we know the storyline that surrounded S2 this year on, you know, the cognitive test that is able to measure, you know, how you process things. I mean, we had the one of the CEOs and the co-founders of S2. They were on with Robbie and Rexroad just about a couple months ago. And, you know, they said that they can generate a situation where it acts as if there's somebody blitzing you and it can track what your mind does in a scenario like that. Like, it's such a high level test. And, you know, that actually is one thing that we haven't really talked about with Will Levis. He scored right under Bryce Young. Bryce Young got the 98, which was incredible, off the charts, similar to Joe Burrow's 97 a couple of years ago. He got a 93. So when you talk about a guy who can process things and that quickness, and there's still so much to know about S2, but that's also something that we haven't talked about. But I think the combination, Junie, of Malik Willis coming into this system last year, we looked at the team and, you know, it wasn't a solid team constructed around him. The defense, yeah, that was solid until they had a bunch of injuries with Danico Autry, and Simmons was injured, and David Long Jr., Fulton, all over the place. But when you look at the offense, it was easy to think going into that season that, well maybe Traylon Burks can can have like a big rookie year, and maybe he can pick up some of the production that A.J. Brown had and Derrick Henry. And, you know, there were a lot of what ifs. But I think when we saw what the offense actually was, and that even when Ryan Tannehill was in it, the team was only scoring 17 to 20 to 23 points. To then put a rookie quarterback in who wasn't at a Power 5 school and performed in an offense that doesn't translate into the NFL, and to put him in there, I do think it looked, you know, a lot worse. And he could have looked better if maybe some pieces were around him. But I think it was so far gone that this team has every right to have concerns as you head in, and hence them drafting a quarterback this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was an easy decision. Ryan Tannehill's aging. Ryan Tannehill isn't the ultra-elite quarterback that can play into his late 30s, and they need to find an answer. And with everything going on in this team and the turnover, now is the time to go and find it. And when you saw what Malik Willis could do, the fact that he got benched for Josh Dobbs, and Josh Dobbs comes in the same scenario and plays a lot better than him. I mean, it was night and day between what Josh Dobbs and what Malik Willis was doing. And the fact of the matter is they don't believe in this kid. And this kid is going to have to come to camp. He's going to have to look good, or he will not be a Tennessee Titan when the season starts. Like, that is a 100% real possibility that he could get cut, and potentially his NFL career could really be over. I mean, who else is going to go out and take a flyer on Malik Willis when that's what he put on tape last year, and then he comes in and he gets beat out by a rookie? That's flat out what it's going to be. It's like, how many chances are you going to get? This is a do-or-die situation for Malik Willis, in my opinion. And if I'm being honest, I don't see how he makes this roster. I don't.
I'm on the same page with you, honestly, unless we see some absolutely insane, drastic change, looking like a completely different guy as we head into training camp this year. But moving off the quarterback conversation, we want to hear from you. 615-737-1025. Text or call. What is your optimism like heading into the season? And who do you think, other than the quarterback, needs to have a really big season from last year to this year? Who do you think needs to take the biggest jump this year to impact this Tennessee Titans team? All next on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. I have been promising Beach Boy tickets all show long, and we're going to give them out right now. I'm going to ask you a trivia question, and you need to call Nick Keezer at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. These are Beach Boy tickets. Here's the trivia question. One of the founding members of the Beach Boys' nephew is playing in the NBA playoffs right now. Who is he? One of the Beach Boys' founding members' nephew is playing in the NBA playoffs right now. Who is he? Call 615-737-1025 and tell Nick the answer, and we will get you some Beach Boys tickets. Very exciting. Junie, obviously do not say the answer, but do you know the answer?
I do know the answer. And I'm also hoping that nobody wins this, because I want to go to the Beach Boys bad.
It's the Beach Boys at the Symphony Center on May 27th. Do you
like the Beach Boys? That's a good question.
Oh, my goodness, yes. We actually had one of the Beach Boys on last week with Chase and I, and we discussed how their music is so interesting because it transcends generations. I mean, they've been playing for over six decades, which is crazy. I mean, my mom has listened to them. And then I feel like at every young event, whether it was, you know, an after school event or camp, there always was like Surfing USA, right? Like, yeah. Or in movies growing up and everything like that.
So I grew up going to Holiday World, which is, you know, up in Indiana. And their water park only plays Beach Boys in Beach.
Oh, there you go.
So we would go every year. And so imagine like being in the water park listening to the Beach Boys. It's just such like – it's such a vibe. And so my dad, I remember when I – as a kid, like I used to love the music so much. Mm-hmm. He had all the Beach Boy cassette tapes. And whenever I'd want to listen to a song, he'd always have to, like, put it in the player with the old headphones. and so, like, I kind of got, like, a taste of what his childhood was like because he would always let me listen to those old Beach Boy cassette tapes. So I'm actually really trying to go to this show. So, but best of luck to whoever does win and gets to go see him in concert because it's going to be a good one.
Nick is chatting right now. So if he gives us a thumbs up, I think we have a winner.
He's still chatting.
Okay, we'll wait to see if we have a winner, and then we will give that answer away. But Junie, I teased it before we headed into this segment and said, you know, take the quarterback position out of it for a second. Take Will Levis out of it. Take Ryan Tannehill out of it. Who do you believe has to have the biggest jump from last year to this year when it comes to, I mean, hey, when it comes to just staying healthy and being a factor day in and day out and each and every Sunday? We have a couple texts on our text line, and I think there's some answers probably that most people are on the same boat. Let's see. We've got – oh, well, now there's some answers in here.
Can I tell you the obvious – this isn't my answer, but I think the obvious answer of a guy that needs to take a big jump has to be Treylon Burks.
Of course.
You know, whether he likes it or not, being involved in the AJ trade – and, you know, trading away your number one receiver, your top guy, Ryan Tannehill's favorite target, and the replacement is you, and you're a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm. And they traded up to get you.
And they traded up to get him. He has got to come out and play well. Now, this is not my pick. I think that's just the very obvious pick that a lot of people are going to say, just with how depleted this wide receiver room is. But for me, I'm going to go Christian Fulton.
I like that.
I like Christian Fulton because this defense last year, in the beginning of the year, was really, really good. We saw them play amazing. But they kind of, you know, fell off a bit in the second half of the season. And this secondary was ranked 32nd in pass defense. And Christian Fulton is going to be on a contract year. And we've seen Christian Fulton, at his best, play really, really well. But injuries have been a concern. Mm-hmm. You know, he got called out along with David Long Jr.
And we saw what happened
to David Long Jr. I think that Christian Fulton has a lot of pressure. And I think that in order for this secondary to play well and to keep up with the talent and production of the front seven, he's got to be the guy that's really fighting for it. And I'm looking forward to it because, you know, it's make or break for guys in contract years. They could either bust or they could either play really, really well. So I would like to see Christian Fulton play really well for this team this year.
So Alex in Montreal on our text line says, all the cornerbacks need to step up. They were getting torched last year. Christian Fulton, you mentioned. Roger McCreary was still a rookie last year, but I think he actually was, you know, him and Kevin Byard were the two in that secondary that were actually able to stay healthy week to week. But Christian Fulton is one guy that I'm really looking at. Can he take that next step into being one of the top corners in the league and stay healthy?
Elijah Molden as well. You know, he was dealing with injuries. He had a decent rookie year the year prior. You know, they were really looking forward to him to be in that slot position.
Mm-hmm.
Barely played, tried to come back, didn't work out, and then he missed the rest of the season. So is he a guy that has a lot of pressure to build up with in order for him to kind of keep a spot on this roster? Because, listen, you know, Roger McCreary, he might be the future in that slot spot, and that might be his best fit. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I look at that and think that, you know, Roger obviously will likely be on the outside if Elijah is healthy. But, you know, it could be an easy transition to be like, you know, Roger might be better suited in the slot. Elijah can't stay healthy, mm-hmm. And we really need that production. So another name to look out for.
Well, I think, too, Junie, if you take a look at the defense as a whole, we saw it last year at the beginning of the year. I mean, they had a stretch of games where they were recording 3 sacks and 1 interception for about 6 games straight. I mean, something that defenses haven't done since, I mean, the 85 Bears. They were on track to break that record. The last game where they didn't break it was the Packers game. And then, you know, after that game, it was the John Robinson firing. And we saw what happened with the losing streak towards the end of the season. But, you know, we talk about how we have concerns with the offense and what is it going to look like next year. But I think you can look at the defense and you can talk yourself into it being really successful. I think you can say, well, you know, hopefully Christian Fulton stays healthy and Elijah Molden, oh, and Amani Hooker and Kevin Byard will be healthy. He'll be back there. They're not going to trade him. And Roger McCreary another year. But we lost David Long Jr., and I think he's going to be a significant loss. Nico Autry's getting another year older. Also, you lost DeMarcus Walker, who was significant to this team last year, had 7 sacks last year. Jeffrey Simmons, he got his big contract, but he was injured last year. Hopefully he stays healthy this
year. Is Harold Landry going to come back and play well off his ACL? We saw this with Bud Dupree. You know, Harold Landry had a 12-sack season the year prior. He tore his ACL in the beginning of this season. Bud Dupree was one of those. He had 11 sacks in 2020. Mm-hmm. And he was looking like he was going to be really good, got a big payday even though he tore his ACL, and he wasn't the same player. You know, he couldn't stay healthy. He was good at times when he was on the field, especially that first year with the Titans, but we saw how it lingered and it hurt other areas, because when your knee is hurt and it's recouping, sometimes that hurts other areas of your body because your body is trying to elevate and compensate for that injury. And so sometimes it's not the knee that you injured, it's other areas that are getting overworked because it's trying to compensate for that. So Harold Landry is a question mark. And I'll also say this, as much as we talk about the offensive line, you know, he was a rookie last year, but Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, like what is he going to do? Are they going to keep him on the outside? Are they going to move him on the inside? Who knows? But he's got to be better than last year. He had the excuse because he was a rookie coming into a situation with an overall bad offensive line and a lot of the veterans going down with injury. He's got to be better too. So we can go up and down this roster. For me, I think Christian Fulton is the most interesting. Mm-hmm. I think Treylon Burks is the most important. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many question marks. And I love that you brought up David Long Jr. because that is an X factor on this defense, the way he could, you know, cover those short to intermediate routes over the middle, the way that he could evade blockers and use his hips to make tackles in the run game. And you're talking about replacing him with Azeez Al-Shaair and Monty Rice, who neither of which have been full-time starters in this league.
Well, and even just David Long's, you know, aura and everything he did on the field. I mean, I still think of the Chiefs game. He would get in Travis Kelce's head like no other. You know, when it came to just being an absolute dog and competitor, I mean, that's stuff that you can't measure on a stat book. But to our point of, you know, worried about the defense, they also did not draft one defensive player this year in this year's NFL draft. So going to be a big test, a lot of what ifs on each side of the ball. But coming up next, Jonathan Hutton joins us every Monday at 10:30 a.m. from Hot Mic. We'll be back in just a bit. Next on Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle. If you were listening last segment, the answer to the trivia question is Kevin Love. He is the nephew of Mike Love from the Beach Boys. So congratulations, Nick, who was our winner on those Beach Boys tickets. But like we do every Monday at 10:30, we go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic. Jonathan, how are we doing this morning?
Michelle, I'm great. Did you go to Taylor Swift this weekend?
Okay, that's a really sore subject.
Oh, you just had to go there, didn't you?
I didn't get tickets.
Junie was able to go, and you did not get to go?
Listen, I didn't get tickets, and I'm having major FOMO, and I can't go on my phone because it's everywhere. I couldn't even open my door to my apartment because I could hear it. So I'm trying to make the drive to Cincinnati in a couple weeks. But yeah, no,
there's always
I didn't.
A show.
Did you? I'm sure you did.
No, I didn't go. I did not go. I did not brave the swarm of Swifties that overtook Nashville. I preferred to stay indoors during this past weekend, Michelle.
Yeah, it really was insane, to be honest. Hope everybody had fun, though, who did end up getting to go. But Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic on with us. Jonathan, you know, when you take a look at this Tennessee team and the moves that Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel have made either in the draft, just in the offseason, in free agency, do you believe that they're sending a message to fans that, you know, this is the start of the rebuild and that they're gearing up for 2024?
Yeah, I mean, look, straightforward, Michelle, I think they're gearing up for the opening of their stadium. They peaked a couple of years ago. The 2020 season was the year to win it. That's the year that they had the 2,000-yard rusher. That's the year that they had a quarterback that threw for 4,000 yards. They nearly had two different receivers go for 1,000 yards each in A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Jonnu Smith was making great – coming off of a postseason where he came to life and had a solid season the following year. That was the year that they peaked, and since then they've been chasing that season to get back to the postseason and go on a run. And to me, while these moves don't point to, man, we're really selling hope and we're all in it for 2023, I think down the line, if you start to look at when the stadium opens, when Will Levis, as of right now, he's not the starter, but when he is, that'll be the second contract for him, and you don't draft him unless you believe in the guy. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, they've drafted depth. And Amy Adams Strunk, when she fired John Robinson, said the depth was just not good enough. And this is an older Titans roster. They cut the fat of some of the contracts this past offseason with guys like Bud Dupree and others. And they're keeping Tannehill and Henry, but we all know that's for a season. And they're looking ahead to the talent behind those guys. They ran it back for the second consecutive year with a backup quarterback and a backup running back on day two. And I can't help but think that they're building for the future while also trying to sell the fact that, oh, by the way, Tannehill and Henry are back with Treylon Burks. And we were 7-3 at one point, 7-5 when we fired our general manager. And now it's a collaborative effort between head coach and new GM.
Yeah, a lot of messages being sent out there, Jonathan. So I don't know if you saw this article. It was written by Nick Suss of The Tennessean, but essentially he interviewed Malik Willis's personal quarterback coach. And
yeah,
he had some interesting comments just based on Malik's performance last year, how he believed that they wanted him to be more like more like Logan Woodside in being more accurate and not trying to make as much plays as he was with his legs. I mean, how do you view him going into this season? A guy who he's still trying to earn a spot on an NFL roster, but based off the moves that this team has made, I mean, and even last year, the moves with Josh Dobbs, I mean, it's pretty clear that they don't have a lot of faith in him.
That's right. I mean, they could not run their offense with him, regardless of the injuries that they had. And the stats, just the numbers alone tell you that they couldn't stay balanced in Todd Downing's offense with Malik Willis at quarterback. He's completing 6 passes at Houston last year. He attempted 16 in that game. Josh Dobbs comes in as the starter on, 3 or 4 days after being signed, and he's attempting 25 to 28 passes. So it's not like defensive coordinators could just say, oh, it's a run. Now, there were a lot of runs with Josh Dobbs, and there he's handing off to Henry, but it was nowhere close to where Malik Willis was dropping back and taking off. And look, I think what was said by the quarterback coach for Willis is fair. I thought he was very honest, which is what you're looking for in an interview like that. And he said, hey, you know, the plant feet, the back foot on the plant, he's late on a throw, throws a pick. Those are things that can't happen in the NFL. And Malik Willis was learning on the job, and he was doing it from day one, where it was evident he was not ready to play. He was not ready to be a backup quarterback, but they invested a 3rd-round pick in him, trying to upgrade and do exactly what they're doing right now with Will Levis. And from the first training camp practice, where, I mean, it's very difficult to sack the quarterback in practice in the NFL. And he's standing back there when he's told to throw it, not pulling the trigger. And he's either doing one read and taking off running in a OTA where they're begging you to throw it and they're telling the defense not to come through and injure anyone by trying to break up a pass. I mean, it should be layup after layup in these practices, and it wasn't for him. And he's behind the eight ball. And I understand where you're coming from on he's trying to make an NFL roster. I think at this point he's a practice squad player, and that's probably where he should have been last year, albeit at the time, they probably felt like he was going to get picked up in waivers in September if they cut him.
We're talking to Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow that you can hear on 94.9 The Fan Monday through Friday, 2 to 5. Hutton, we've been asking Titans fans what they should feel optimistic about going into the season. And some things that I've been hearing consistently on this is they have a really, really good defense and that the defense is going to carry them to some wins. I feel like there is a bunch of questions on this defense with, you know, Harold Landry coming back, losing David Long Jr. What are your thoughts on the optimism going into the season and the level of play that this team could see from the defense?
It's a great question, Junie, because this is the team, in my mind, they've never said this and won't. I felt like the philosophy was they need to be great on defense and good on offense. And they will make the stop when necessary. And that's what got them to 7 wins after the Washington game with the David Long interception. But to me, with the guys that they've lost off the defense from last year, production-wise, it's not going to be hard to replace. And it just the numbers speak for themselves. I realize they've replaced Bud Dupree with a pass rusher that no one's heard of for the most part, or, you know, speed off the edge, and you're thinking, well, backup from San Francisco. But I look at it different. I look at it as if Arden Key comes in and gives you 4 sacks, he's giving you what Bud Dupree was giving you for $10 million plus per season, and it was more than that. So I don't know if this is a great defense, but on paper with their starting lineup before injuries are starting to accrue, this is a really good defense week in, week out that did a really great job of keeping them in games. They need the offense to complement them, and right now the wide receiving core is going to hold them back. But pass rush-wise, I think they're fine. Harold Landry, I get where you're coming from on coming off the ACL, but he's had plenty of time to recover. Jeffrey Simmons is paid. He's happy. Denico Autry is back. He's always productive when he's on the field. And Vrabel specifically mentioned Tyre Tart on the inside as someone that doesn't need to just rest and getting fat and happy on getting an extension to stay with the team. He needs to continue to improve instead of being comfortable with the improvement that he's already made since he entered the league. I think he's key to what they do. But for the production, they went cheaper. But just because they went cheaper on the payroll doesn't mean that they are getting less production. The guys that were overpaid were not producing, and that's why they were kicked to the curb.
Now, Peter King is one of the most connected members of the media when it comes to, you know, NFL teams and getting scoops. And he did an article on off-season power rankings and where he thinks teams have lined up when it comes to the offseason. And he has Tennessee at 18. And he says, feels like the Titans are a slow start away from Will Levis playing by November 1st, selling Derrick Henry by the trade line and building for 2024. So with that being said, do you see the Titans potentially moving off one of these older veterans either before the season or during the season when it comes to a Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, or maybe even a Ryan Tannehill?
Depends on where their record is. If they start winning with Will Levis, look, the second season I was a part of Titans radio was Vince Young's rookie year. He didn't start that year, but when he did, it's not like they were a very good team. Whenever he was inserted in the starting lineup, though, they ended up 8-8, and he was the offensive rookie of the year. There was momentum with that, despite being a very average football team by the end of the season. They switched quarterbacks. There was a spark. You progressed. They're in a division that's not as tough as the other AFC divisions with the AFC South. But 18th is pushed. They're pushed down in large part due to their conference. If you're going to make the trade, it's either at the deadline because you can sell high at that point and get a pick in return because the team is desperate. But keep in mind with like Derrick Henry, there are only a handful of teams that would bring Derrick Henry on at this time compared to at the trade deadline. What I mean is right now, offensively, if you have Derrick Henry on your roster, you are a run first base offense. He's a volume back. By the time the trade deadline comes and goes, the majority of this year's money that's headed his way in guarantees is paid for. And so the team's only picking up a portion of that contract to finish the season, and it would be to a playoff contender. So the trade deadline makes sense from that aspect. And you want to get something for an asset if you know he's not going to be a part of the 2024 season if your team sucks. You want to load up on draft picks, and the time to do it would be at the deadline, not after the season when he's a free agent. That makes total sense. And I can see a scenario where we see Will Levis inserted into the lineup for one of two reasons. Either Tannehill takes the beating like he did last year and he's forced to miss games, or they say, hey, it's time to turn things over to the rookie. Let's start the clock. He's on a four-year contract, not a fifth-year option guy because we didn't draft him in the first round. We need to go ahead and progress towards the future because where we are record-wise. There are a lot of factors that go into that, but that's certainly got to be one of the scenarios that we discuss.
Jonathan, quickly before you leave, switching over to the SEC, the Alabama baseball coach being fired after some reports that he had some involvement in a big gambling situation. How do you view this situation, and how do you think, you know, when we find more, because we still don't know a lot regarding this situation, but how do you think that this could, you know, impact college athletics as a whole? I mean, gambling has become so easy. It's just the touch of your phone, you can place a bet now.
Look, I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg with what has been going on. And I am skeptical to just sit here and say that the Alabama baseball coach was the only coach in college athletics that's doing this, or in sports in general. But keep this in mind. It took the NBA 2 years to figure out what Tim Donaghy was doing behind the scenes with the bookies and helping out behind the scenes as an NBA ref in fixing games and outcomes, because he did it on the down low. He had a burner phone if he used one. And that's the difference here is the idiot head coach used his cell phone and they can number. Link it straight back to the former high school coach who's at Great American Ballpark. A coincidence, but a crazy connection that he's in Cincinnati, home of Pete Rose and the Cincinnati Reds, and this all goes down. And it's flagged because it's college baseball. Normally on the app, Michelle, you can make up to a $500 bet only. They cap it for college baseball. But if you go up to a sports book counter, you can bet cash and you can bet more. And that's what flagged this. So considering that they normally cap it with college baseball, and it was a red flag because of the size of the bet and how they placed these bets at the timing that they did. The fact that you can't cap, and there's so many more people betting on college football or the NFL or any sport compared to college baseball. Yeah, it goes on. But, I mean, you have to be a real – you got to lack some smarts to do what Bohannon did, which was use his phone and track it back to the guy and know that, hey, you can only bet the actual money line in college baseball, and a ton of it came on LSU minus 225, which isn't going to get you much if you're betting $10. Mm-hmm. But if you bet a significant amount, you're going to win something that normally that sports book isn't used to paying out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I agree. I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. Between that, the NFL players who got suspended recently,
yes,
and then obviously Calvin Ridley a year ago. Jonathan, always a pleasure on Monday morning. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and you can listen to him later this afternoon with Chad Withrow.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Have a great week.
Yep, Jonathan.
Have a good one, Hutt.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike joins us every Monday at 10:30. Going to recap some of the stuff he said. And then, speaking of betting, Junior and I are going to give you some of our picks for tonight's games. Coming up next on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Putting a bow on things today, Chase and Michelle, Michelle Knezvik, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe, Nick Kieser. Junie, always a pleasure when we don't get to do Saturdays together when you come in and hang out with me.
I know, because you're Miss Continental USA, Florida, New York, Chicago, New Orleans. She's everywhere. Michelle Knezvik is everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. She never quits.
I will say, this is the sixth weekend in a row that I've gone away, and I haven't had just a relaxing Sunday to do absolutely nothing other than sit on my couch and put my feet up. It was quite glorious. It was quite glorious to do. But not traveling anywhere for a while. Staying put here in Nash, Vegas for a while.
that's probably a wise thing to do.
A wise thing to do. You know, it catches up to you. But I will say, New Orleans, I got some good food down there.
Oh, I
some
bet.
Good food down there. I need to not eat out for a while. How about that?
I have never been to New Orleans, but I have always wanted to go for the food because anytime something's Cajun, I'm interested because I love Cajun seasoning. It's always right.
Oh, yeah. I ate enough for a couple trips there. But as I mentioned before we headed into the break, we got a lot of games coming up tonight. Some of these series that I'm really looking forward to. I'm looking to see if the Knicks can even out that series with the Heat. The Heat are in – they're going to be in South Beach tonight. And then also the – Warriors to tie it up with the Lakers. I want the Lakers and Warriors to go to seven games because, I mean, you look at the Suns being able to even it out with the Nuggets and the Celtics and the 76ers. I mean, this is one of my favorite rounds.
Yeah, this is always a great round. But have you seen the video circulating of the dog shooting the basketball? and it's like there's one trash can for Lakers, one trash can for Warriors, and he shoots it seven times. And it's predicting the series.
No way.
He is 3-0 so far.
Wait,
in
that's
his predictions.
Wild.
So according to the dog's prediction,
according to this
dog's prediction that is circulating across social media, and a lot of you know what I'm talking about, has the Lakers going up 3-1 tonight, but has the Warriors winning the series, and LeBron would, according to the dog, will blow a 3-1 lead. So,
well, whoever is the owner of that dog, if that becomes accurate and that's how the series turns out, sir, you need to go place a bet on Superbook or do something because that's some major luck.
Oh, yeah.
Right there. Taking a look at the lines on Superbook Sportsbook. So we have got – one second. I got to run back for a second. Okay. Taking a look at the NBA games tonight. New York Knicks and the Miami Heat. I mentioned the game is in Miami. Miami's up 2-1 on the Knicks. Miami, a 4.5-point favorite. Juni, at first look in this game tonight, what are you thinking? And also, the Knicks are plus 165 on the money line.
I think betting on New York is interesting, but I'm going to go with Heat. I like Jimmy Butler. I think he has been the story of the playoffs. You know, an 8 seed that just absolutely dominated the number 1 seed Milwaukee. You know, they
how about the Bucks
favorite.
Head coach getting fired too?
That's a little wild
something
to me.
Something we haven't talked about. I agree.
But I just like where the Heat are at. I think they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now. I don't think anybody wants to see them. And being down in Miami, I just don't foresee them losing at home. I think they win this game. And I think they cover just due to some late fouling, but I think it'll be a close one. But give me Miami, and I'll take the 4.5 points.
See, I like the Knicks plus the 4.5, but I think ultimately the Heat win by about 3.
Okay.
So I think the Heat will come out on top. I think they go up 3-1 in this series, but I do think that New York will cover that 4.5-point spread. Moving on to Rex Rhodes' favorite team, the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. Lakers are 3-point favorite. The Lakers went up 2-1 the other night. So the Warriors are looking to tie up this series. Also, something important to mention, Bronny James has committed to USC. So LeBron was very happy about that after the game. First person in his family to go to college.
I mean, that's fantastic.
Phenomenal.
I mean, LeBron, you know, he got drafted straight out of high school. I mean, he would have went to college, but, you know, likely he would have only been a year. But, you know, Bronny going in, you know, good for him. I think it's going to be good.
Lakers, a 3-point favorite, Juni. I'm taking the Warriors to tie up this series, plus the 3. Also going to take them plus 130 on the money line. I just think that this team's experience won't let them go down 3-1 in this series. But I have a feeling you may be going with the dog.
I'm not.
Okay.
Because I just, the Warriors are the best team at making adjustments from game to game in any given series. I think they even it up. I think it's going to be tied 2-2, and we'll see where it goes from there. But I also like the over in this game, 228.
Okay. I like the over, too.
I like the over.
And then quickly, we'll hit some NHL games. We got the Vegas Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers. The Knights are plus 160 on the money line. I think Edmonton wins tonight. I mean, not much value there on the money line, but I think Edmonton takes this game.
I'm going to take Edmonton, and I will take the over in this game. Me and Keezer, we took the under in game two. What was the final score in game two? I know Edmonton won.
Edmonton did win. I don't have anything in front of me to tell me. I think it was... Ooh, what was it? I'm trying to remember because it was a pretty big game. I think it went to overtime, maybe. Yeah, I don't have anything pulled up yet. So.
Okay. Oh, the under did hit. So I am 2-0 on the over-under in this series. So I think it's going to go over tonight.
Okay, there you go. That's all we got for you today. Juni Riddle, thanks for filling in for Chase McCabe today. We'll be back in Adam. But up next, handing the baton to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.